Man, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with me? The question's, what's wrong with you? We don't always see things the same, do we? Especially when it's seeing ourselves. I'd like for you to start off in a story that's one of my favorites because of the many angles of lessons that are within it. In Matthew, the 26th chapter, a man that thought he knew himself had to be proven he didn't know himself at all. We often refer to it every Lord's Day, not every Lord's Day, but quite often. As we relate Matthew 26, verse 31 through 35, Peter is told by Christ that he's not as strong as he thinks he is. And he says that one of you disciples is going to deny me. And Peter answered and said to him that all men shall be offended because of you, yet will I never be offended. And Jesus said, verily I say unto thee that this night before the cock crows, you shall deny me three times. Peter said, though I should die with you, I'll never deny you. And likewise chimed in all the disciples. And you continue on into the chapter when the moment of test is going on. Verse 69, Peter sat without the palace, and a damsel came unto him, saying, you were with Jesus. But he denied before them, saying, I know not what you're talking about. And when he was gone out to the porch, another maid saw him and said, this fellow was also with Jesus. And again he denied with an oath, saying, I don't know that man. And after a while came to him they that stood by and said to Peter, surely thou art one of them, for your speech berates you. Then he began to curse and to swear, saying, I know not the man. And immediately the cock crew. And Peter remembered the word of Jesus, which he had said to him just hours before, you will deny me three times. And Peter wept bitterly. The truth about life is that we can't always see the whole picture by ourselves. And sometimes we can't see ourselves at all, even when we are certain that we can, just like Peter. Perhaps the Navajo Indians were onto something years ago. They believed that evil spirits can be anywhere. And so when they made their blankets and their rugs on their looms, they would intentionally weave in a flaw into the pattern. And that flaw was to let the evil spirits out. What about us? What do we do? How do we get rid of our flaws? How do we get rid of our evil spirits? I used to be a perfectionist in everything that I tried to do. And when you have that kind of approach, you can be difficult to please. Today, I'm not perfect of much of anything, except forgetting where I was going, what I was going to say when I got there. That I have down pretty well. Now, this Friday on August 19th, my wife will have tolerated, persevered, and kept the faith for 43 years being married to a man with flaws. Somewhere around the year Rodney was born in 1988, after 15 years of trying to please me, she was stressed. My wife doubted that she could ever please me. And one day she told me as much. And she said if we needed to separate, it was up to me. I will not forget that. I was a perfectionist. I wanted things done exactly right. Life's not that way. It's not that way all the time. And it was what I needed to be said to me. Because I was just like Peter. I couldn't see myself. And the reason this hit me was I wanted to be a successful Christian. And I wasn't being a successful husband. My wife knew she was less than perfect. And in these moments of stress, she often would tell me, "You could have done worse than me. You could have done worse than me." She knew she was less than perfect, but she was unsure if I knew that I was less than perfect. It was time for me to decide in my life if Christ was going to be first in my life or if I was going to be first in my life. There's one piece of advice I have heard often through my life. It's to be observant of others and learn from their mistakes so you don't repeat them. We live in a world of less than perfect people. We are all flawed. Romans, the 3rd chapter, verse 23 says, "For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God." There's not one of us that are perfect. That man was crucified. So if there are no perfect people to pick for a mate, the secret is to find someone that in spite of their flaws, they fear God, they love God, and they will submit themselves to doing the will of God instead of their own will. And if you can find somebody that will do that, it will overcome their flaws. It will allow you to work through the tough times every marriage is going to face. My brother is 4 years older than me, and many of you don't even know him. Many of you may not even knew I had a brother. He was a member here. When I was entering high school, my brother was just graduating. I watched him graduate high school one day in May, and I watched him get married later that month at the age of 17 because his girlfriend was pregnant. And at 18, he became a father. And although his wife got baptized and began coming to church, she wasn't grounded in being a Christian. And before I got out of high school, she had had an affair, had broken up the marriage. And after seeing my brother married 3 times, he's still not happy. People with multiple divorces will tell you, I left the first marriage because of this flaw that they had. I left the second marriage because of a different flaw my mate had. And the third had a different flaw as well. So if you're looking for the perfect match, it's not going to happen. We have to find a way to overlook each other's flaws in order to be successful in life. Ecclesiastes, the fourth chapter, gives you a clue how to do that. Ecclesiastes, chapter 4, verses 9 through 12, read this way. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat, but how can one be warm alone? And if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. A threefold cord. That is the secret. God created two institutions for man's assistance on earth: the church and marriage. Neither of those institutions work well without the other. So if you decide to be married and you both have the Lord first in your life, you have a threefold cord that will not be quickly broken. The church underperforms when both husband and wife are not equally committed to the Lord. The marriage also will underperform or fail without both putting Christ first. And any children born to those marriages have probably a 25% chance or less of being an active Christian when that child becomes an adult. When I was first interested in dating, it was strongly hormone driven. When I went to choose who I was going to go out with. But you know, by the time I got out of high school and witnessed my brother's life shattered by his broken heart, because he trusted that woman completely, I reconsidered how I was going to choose who I dated. I was in a serious relationship with a non-Christian, and I asked her to come to church with me, and she declined. And after seeing my brother's marriage ingrained in my head, watching that marriage disappear, I never dated that girl again, because I had learned from my brother, you have to get things in order to make life manageable. And when that girl didn't want to come to church, I could never have a threefold cord to hold my marriage together. So I had just enough teaching that I decided to go a different direction. I decided I wanted someone who was raised in a Christian home and wanted to be a full-time Christian mother and wife. And though it wasn't always the right decision that I made when we were young parents, that I worked so many hours and never spent enough time with my two oldest boys, I hope someday that my three Christian sons realize I did it so she could be home with them, and that her loving personality would be more dominant in their lives than mine, with my flaws. We are all flawed. The Lord made us with flaws. that we might have a chance to be humbled, that we might have a chance to have a desire to seek something better than what we'll find here on earth. Paul said in 2 Corinthians, the 12th chapter, verses 7 through 10, that three times he asked for a physical impediment that was on him to be removed. And the Lord said no three times. James, the 4th chapter, verse 10, tells us to humble yourself in the sight of the Lord and he will lift you up. Why are you here? I believe life is a test, and I believe I have a few of the questions on the test. The first question is, can you put the Lord's will ahead of your own? The second question could be, do you realize that the talents that you do have were given to you and there were nothing that you were great enough to create upon your own? 1 Corinthians, the 4th chapter, verse 6 and 7 says that if our talents were given to us, why do we glory in them? They are gifts of God. So do you give God the glory for your talents? Do you realize that if you've been given talents, to whom much is given, much is required, in Luke, the 12th chapter, verse 48? Will it take your entire life to realize you are flawed, or will somebody open your eyes for you? If we are all flawed, the only real test in life is, can you love each other anyway? For years, I sought the perfection rather than loving each other anyway. You know, it's real easy to be kind to a Special Olympics child, but can you be Christ-like to all the adults in your life? Can you be Christ-like to your mate, even with their flaws? I wasn't. What if you could choose between the following three challenges of what your test would be in life to be successful as a Christian? What if the first choice was you would be given lots of talents, and the challenge would be to remain humble, respect others who are more flawed than yourself, and always, always give God the glory, remembering what happened to Moses when he failed to do that, taking water from the rock? What if the second choice was, if you didn't take the talents, that the second choice would be to live a very poor life and find a way to be content anyway? What if the third choice was to be smarter than those around you and not flaunt it or belittle others and still love them even though they were flawed? Every one of us may have a different cross to bear. Maybe your cross is controlling your talents to where your ego is bigger than what it should be. Many of us have been richly blessed in this country. We need to make sure we remember where the blessings came from. Some days your biggest challenge in life may be, as a Christian, to be a helpful, supportive mate in spite of my flaws. In Acts, the 9th chapter, verses 15 and 16, when Saul had been converted, yet to be changing his name to Paul, Ananias was scared to get involved because he'd already heard what Saul of Tarsus had done to the rest of the Christians that he knew of. And he was persuaded to go ahead through this because this man has to be shown how great a thing he's going to suffer on my behalf, for my name's sake. And when you go to 2 Corinthians 11th chapter, Paul lists a lot of those things that he suffered. How many times did he receive 39 stripes? How many times he was stoned, suffered shipwreck, trying to stay alive that he might be able to preach the word? And so he not only had the physical beatings, he had to find a way to love the people with their flaws and convince them to change the way they thought, that they put God first in their life. 2 Timothy 3:12 tells us that all that will live godly in Christ Jesus will suffer persecution. 1 Peter, the 2nd chapter and the 3rd chapter as well, and the 4th chapter have verses that refer to the fact that if you get the opportunity in your life to suffer on behalf of the Lord, happy you should be that you got that opportunity. Now, the next thing that I'm going to discuss, I want you to listen closely. In Matthew, the 10th chapter, verse 42, and also in Mark, chapter 9, we are talked to about giving a cup of cold water. May be something that simple that will be asked of us to do. So what if on your judgment day you are questioned about the cup of cold water you had in your hand? All of us have a chance in our lives to hold a cup of cold water and decide what to do with it. What if on the judgment day you are questioned about what you did with your cup of cold water? Did you hand it to someone in need? Or in a moment of anger, did you quench their spirit and throw it in their face? You could say that about me with my wife. A case could be made at that time that I could have quenched her spirit. What will you do with a cup of cold water? I believe that there will be many people that attempt to be religious and may never have a problem with wanting to murder someone or steal from someone or commit any other sin. But they may be in judgment day being condemned because of what they did or did not do with a cup of cold water. James, the 4th chapter, tells us, to him who knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. And if you have the opportunity to support somebody that's got flaws, and instead you quench their spirit with the cup of cold water, how do you stand before God and give him an answer? King David had to be shown he was the man at fault. He was the man that stole his neighbor's sheep and killed it. I had to be shown by my wife that she didn't know what else to do to please me. So why did I take a cup of cold water and quench her spirit when she was trying? What have you done? I bring this up because I don't want you to have to stand before God being asked, why did you quench somebody's spirit when you had the chance to reach down and lift them up? you can save somebody with a cup of cold water, or you can condemn yourself with a cup of cold water. It's not fun when you find yourself in Peter's shoes and somebody else knows you better than you do and they have to prove it to you. I beg you to analyze your life. You've still got breath of life within you. You can still change. You still got hope. Will we still be here tonight? You have the moment now to make your life before God. Ask Him to erase your flaws and remember them no more as we stand and sing.
In sorrow.